This is Beyond the News, a special series on the 2023 general elections. I'm Ayodele Adio, and I'm with Michelle Agu.
Well, first of all, welcome to Avalon Radio. My name is Michelle, and with me is Ayo. Hi, Ayo. How are you doing?
Doing great. Couldn't feel any better.
I can imagine. Traffic was crazy today, and, you know, on the radio when I was coming here, I was, you know, listening to conversations about, you know, the elections and what's going to happen come 2023 in Nigeria. It's looking like, you know, it's getting more interesting as we proceed every single day. The politics is heating up. Many conversations are being had. The politicians are drafted. What was one of the highlights for you over the past week?
I'll say the Ekiti elections. The Ekiti elections was the highlight for me because it was supposed to set some sort of, give some sort of a momentum for any of the political parties going into the 2023 elections.
Right.
And it was interesting because the candidate who has been accused of being ill and frail and all of sorts was in Ekiti. Campaigning for his political party that eventually got to win the elections on Saturday. Unfortunately, the healthier ones, in court, was in Germany, I think, and then later in Dubai.
During the elections,
and later in Dubai. So the PDP did not get any support in Ekiti from the national. There were hardly any governors in Ekiti, neither did their presidential candidate.
Are you saying Shane Makinde didn't show up to support?
He wasn't there. I heard that he held the rally over Zoom, right? So he's been having problems with Fayose, and there's been tussle about the leadership of the party. So that's been a problem. And then, of course, the Peter Obi movement thing. Peter Obi was in Egypt. Unfortunately, and why this was a problem for me is that you never get a better opportunity to rally your base than in an election. And so I figured that they have missed a huge opportunity, because what should have happened was he should have been in Ekiti, he should have set up a structure in Ekiti, and he should have put in putting their best foot forward.
Some sort of disability for the Labour Party.
Exactly. So that gives them a lot of momentum. They don't have to win. They don't have to come second or distant third.
But don't you think it's a little bit short timing, you know, for them to put something together? Okay, you know what? We'll come back to this Ekiti election much later. We'll touch on it later on. But let's talk about these presidents to be, these candidates and their vice or their deputy and the people running with them. You know, I think the person that, first of all, to me, among all three, that seems super ready to go was Atiku, or is Atiku. He was the first to name his, you know, his running mates on national TV, like a true press conference, talked to the people and said, hey guys, this is my vice, or this is my running mate. His name is Ifeanyi Okowa. The other guys, you know, just put out, you know, mere statements here and there, either via social media. We'll talk about them later. Let's talk about Atiku right now and Ifeanyi Okowa. First of all, the rumor, it started with rumors. Oh my God. Could it be him? Could it be Wike? Could it be Yesen Wike? Could it be Ifeanyi Okowa? When you finally confirmed that it was, you know, Ifeanyi Okowa, what did you immediately think about? Were you even surprised?
To be honest, I was surprised. I was surprised because I didn't think that Okowa was going to be that effective running mate to Atiku. I didn't even consider it, let me be honest with you. Or maybe because I was biased, I thought Wike was going to get the running in. And why was I thinking Wike? Listen, in campaigns, you want somebody that can energize your base. You want somebody that brings excitement to a campaign. You want somebody who, to be honest, bring some sort of nuisance value, you know, to the campaign. It has a way of rattling the opposition. It has a way of creating excitement.
Buzz,
You constantly share clips, videos, and all of that. And that all plays out to make your candidate a lot more popular. And Wike is a proper fighter. He's somebody you want to take to a street fight, right? He never backs down of a fight. So I thought that having lost the bid to be the candidate of the PDP, he was going to get the running for the nomination, especially if you look at it strategically, that it was clear that Atiku wasn't going to go to the southeast.
How clear was that? I mean, he did the last time.
Yes, because if you run the math, picking a Southeastern candidate wasn't going to add up. Mm. It must have been a difficult decision for him because the PDP was the party where the Igbos or the Southeast had some sort of a belonging.
Mm. And even
and
the
to
South
exclude
South.
Them, mm. You know, would have been an easy decision to make. But if you looked at the numbers, I give you a typical example. As at June 6th, if you look at the voter registration in the South-South, mm-hmm. It was around 2.2 million new registered voters. In the Southeast, it was about 600,000 registered voters. Mm. So the South-South had three times the numbers of registered voters in the Southeast. So if you run the numbers, you know that Peter Obi is going to be on the ballot. He's going to pick a lot of numbers from the Southeast. The APC have a governor in the Southeast, two governors, sorry, in the Southeast. And those governors are going to pull their weight. They are not going to win their state for the APC. But
I know one of them will.
Exactly.
Pull
so
his
so they'll pull their weight.
Yeah.
So you look at it, you're not going to get a block vote for the PDP in the Southeast any longer. So why not pick a running mate from the region where you're likely going to get a block vote? So that for me was the thinking. But I did not envisage it was going to be Okoa.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be Wike. And maybe I was a little bit excited. Carried away by the excitement of his campaign, and I thought that Atiku would have wanted that running into the elections. But unfortunately, did I say unfortunately?
Be that as it may.
He went for Okoa. Yeah.
Okay. Well, to me, I was surprised. I'm from Delta State myself. Okoa is my brother. It was mixed feelings. I couldn't be excited. I was actually underwhelmed by the decision, just like yourself. But hey, he probably has his reasons, and I wish them all the best with that campaign. But I think the duo, they seem super ready to get the ground rolling. And who knows? Ifeanyi Okoa might surprise us during the campaign.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
We never really can tell. Now let's switch over. Let's talk about the man that just keeps being talked about every single time. Peter Obi. He has made a huge name for himself ever since he switched to the Labour Party. What people would have ruled off as a political suicide has suddenly been an awakening and a movement. Now, the conversation about his running mate has been one that has been super debatable because, let's face it, it's from the Southeast and people are expecting him to get a northern weight to pull together. But he has announced Doyin Okogbe, and we were just talking about it not long ago, and we were thinking, is this the right man? But then again, he put out a disclaimer just yesterday on Twitter saying that he's just holding base for now. They're still working together and a running mate will be announced by the party. Who? Any idea who that might be? Have you thought about the names? Kwak Kwan Soo has been coming to mind, but I mean, they are thinking of having a merger, and you know, it's. But all the rumors that we've been hearing, for some reason, they've come out to be true. The APC have been the most mysterious, I have to say. But the rumors with Peter Obi and Ifeanyi Okoa came out to be true. The rumors with Doyin Okogbe came out to be true. Who knows what will happen with Kwak Kwan Soo? What do you think?
Listen, first and foremost, it would be the biggest surprise since I've been following politics in over two decades if Kwan Kwan Soo agrees to run as vice presidential candidate for Peter Obi.
Mm.
I don't see it happening, and the reasons are obvious. Kwan Kwan Soo's NNPP already has sitting senators, it has tens of House of Assembly members, it has House of Rep members. He comes with an equal pedigree as Peter Obi. And for all the buzz and momentum that Peter Obi seems to be getting in the southern part of the country, Kwan Kwan Soo also has that kind of following in the north. And he's also built that following in the north since 2015. So Kwan Kwan Soo also has a fanatical following in the northern part of the country, just as how Peter Obi seems to just be building his own fanatical base in the southern part of the country. So the fact that Kwan Kwan Soo doesn't get as much media attention as Peter Obi does doesn't mean that he doesn't have a base. He has a fanatical following in the northern part of the country. So I really do not see that happening, except by some stroke of genius, somebody drops something in the heart of Kwan Kwan Soo and he agrees to do that, which, I mean, I really don't see that happening. He wants to be president and he's going to go all in. There's been a lot of criticism towards Obi. to have picked Dwayne Okugwe as his running mate. People said he should have picked somebody from the northern part of the country to show some sort of diversity within the party and some understanding of the political terrain. But I guess the reason is because they haven't figured it out. Listen, the Labour Party is... it's been a sleeping dog, to put it respectfully, right? And they're just trying to put things together. They don't have a lot of things figured out. So it's all messy and fluid in the Labour Party, and there's a lot of organizing going on behind the scenes.
That needs to be done too.
To decide on who a presidential vice is a bit too early in the day, and thankfully they're exploiting the loop in the Electoral Act that allows you to substitute your vice presidential candidate, you know, 90 days before the election. So this buys them enough time to be able to get the proper vice presidential candidate. And because his campaign will depend on the quality of the vice presidential candidate he gets to be able to help him reach out across the Niger, you know, the northern part of the country, to be able to get votes there. Because at the moment, he will struggle to make inroads in the north. And the popularity that you even see that Peter Obi has in the southern part of the country seems to be resonating along a middle class group of Nigerians who want better for their country. But I still do not see that fanatical following around what you argue is the proletariat, around Ekiti, Osun, in some southern part of the country and the like. So there's still a lot of work to do. It's fantastic. He already has excited the young, middle-class, educated population, which has been docile for a very long time. And it's a good thing he's excited.
It's like a real awakening for them, yeah.
And it's a fantastic thing he's done that no politician since 1999 has been able to do that. And he's been able to do that. So what he needs to do is expand that base to the proletariat. You know, the people who are selling their votes in Ekiti, for instance, they don't give two hoots about who Peter Obi is. Those are the people he needs to expand that base to. And if he can do that, because there's also a middle class northern population who are also tired of the status quo.
I agree.
And if you can expand the base into that, which was what Kwankoso would have been able to do.
Should they come together?
I'm sure he would stand a good chance. But at the moment, I understand the criticism that picking Dwayne Okugwe is a rookie move. But the reality is Labour hasn't sought his house. His house is not together. Yeah. And there's still a lot of organisation that needs to be done.
I mean, it was a very, very hasty move for him to leave the PDP to the Labour Party. So, I mean, it didn't come with a lot of thinking. But I think he's just like, you know, many of his fanatic or followers, they're all just trying to figure things out as they proceed. Honestly, yeah. I just wish they can expand and leverage on the momentum and be politically strategized and smarter to make the right moves. But, you know, this is politics and a lot of things could change, a lot of things could still happen.
Exactly, he has 8 months.
Yeah, he has 8 months.
You know, I say this a lot. People think that Peter Obi's biggest problem is money. They say his biggest problem is money and structure. Where is he going to get the money and the structures from?
Right.
To be honest, that is not his biggest problem. His biggest problem are political strategists. People who understand how to organize.
Yeah.
People who are gifted in political administration.
And campaigns.
That is his biggest problem.
Right.
Because the Labour Party do not have those assets that are preponderant in the APC and the PDP. Those are the skill sets that the likes of Saraki has in the PDP, the likes of Omishori, you know, people who are gifted in political organizing and administration.
But let's
it's
talk
a
about
rare skill and they don't have that in the Labour Party, because that is what helps you build structures and helps you drawing funding at the end of the day.
Now, let's talk about Tinubu. I think he's back in Lagos right now as we speak. There was, you know, some jamboree in town, you know, traffic here and there. Oh, he's back into Lagos. People were super, super happy. Mazari is his running mate. Former governor of, is it Katsina or Kaduna State? I think Katsina.
Katsina State. He's the younger brother, actually.
The younger brother. Yes, okay, younger brother. So I'm hearing that name for the first time. I never knew who that was before all my life. I don't think anyone in the Southeast knows who that is. I don't even think people in Lagos know who that is. I don't know about people in the North if they know who Mazari is. Do you think he has as much political clout as even, you know, Ifeanyi Okowa? Who is Mazari? What party does he belong to? What is his antecedent? Is he known in his state, in Katsina state? What does he really bring to the table for Tinubu? I mean, Tinubu looks like he needs a wiki. Do you understand? To really like, I mean, this is the guy you have to get. But I don't know if Mazari can do that for him.
To the extent that his brother is a popular politician, I think that's the extent of his popularity in Katsina. But let's not kid ourselves. We know that he's a placeholder. We know that he's not the de facto VP candidate, except he tries to pull a rabbit from the hat the same way they've played a fast one on the Senate president today, right? So we know he's a placeholder candidate, and things
you think
change.
He's a placeholder candidate? He's a placeholder. Mazari?
Yes.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of thinking going in Tinubu's strategy room, and they want to find the right vice presidential candidate, and they are turned in between a rock and a hard place, because if they go northwest with one of the governors in the northwest, or one of the governors in the northeast, which is Zulum, and the northwest, El-Rufai Ganduje, they have a problem. And the problem is they'll be alienating a particular base in the southern part of the country who would say, you are running with a Muslim ticket, excluding...
Not that conversation again.
Excluding a part of the country. I mean, we have to face it. It's a multi-ethnic, multi-religious democracy, right? So that's a problem on one hand. On the other hand, those candidates are going to guarantee him a certain amount of votes in the north, where he needs to compete favorably to win the general election. So he's between a rock and a hard place to make that decision of who he's going to run with. If you asked me, I would say that Tinubu should be a lot more courageous to take a bolder risk. And what risk should he take? If I were his team, I would say that you should go with somebody from a minority northerner, if you'd like, a Boss Mustafa, Dogara, what have you. Because the reality is, Buhari was never popular in the southern part of the country, right? It was the governors in the southwestern part of the country under the ACN that won elections for him in the southern part of the country, right? So the same thing needs to happen for Tinubu in the north. You cannot have a governor in Kaduna State, a governor in Kano State, a governor in Maiduguri, in Borno State, who are all APC members, and are unwilling to deliver their states for the flag bearer of the party. It makes no sense to me. So, why do you want to run with Ganduje and risk alienating an entire base when what Ganduje should be doing is to deliver Kano for you?
Yeah.
Why do you need El-Rufai on your ticket and alienate an entire base when El-Rufai should be focused on delivering Kaduna State for you, right? So, for me, that's the way he should go. Take the bold risk and go with somebody, and do not risk alienating a huge, because it's a problem if he does that. And we might overlook the fact that, okay, these northern governors are likely to get a chunk of votes from their region and all of that. But the reality is, do you want to risk alienating an entire base that are going to go in the opposite direction? So it's food for thought for the people in the strategy team. But I think that, for one, it's clear that that gentleman is a placeholder. Two, they are trying to make a fact-based, data-driven decision of who is going to be the VP. And this brings into consideration eliminating a particular base or not, and which works best for his candidacy. You know, but like I said, he's been between a rock and a hard place. And again, he's also exploiting that loophole in the Electoral Act that gives him, or buys him, enough time to be able to make you know, a smart decision.
All right. Well, let's talk about what could become of, what is it called now? What could become of a debate should that happen? Should they hold a debate today and have all three flag bearers of the main party? And of course, other parties like the SDP, other parties basically, should they come together and have a debate? Do you think debates truly sway the minds of people, or usually their minds are already made up from the get-go? Do you think any fraction could be stolen out of each political party? People who are sympathizers with parties based on what these politicians or personalities put out on the table. How effective are these debates when they happen? Unfortunately, we haven't had that many interesting debates.
I'd ask you, what do you think? Have you been swayed by a debate before?
Absolutely not. I had already made up my mind. I mean, unfortunately, we didn't have any in 2019. Not what we would have expected, but we did. Okay, we had in 2019. It wasn't more of a debate. It was just a personal interview with this party, that party, you know. But I think the only debate that we can personally just recall is Peter Obi and PYO. The prof, and I'm just wondering what these debates will look like if you put Tinubu, you put Atiku, you put Peter Obi. I mean,
I'm ready to bet $100 with you that a debate is not going to hold between those
personalities.
I doubt that's going to happen, because the truth is, it doesn't give them any electoral value. Let's be honest. It's just going to be used for memes by
media.
It's a delight for the media. They want something to talk about, to run editorials on and all of that. It's something we all love, right? But for the political class in Nigeria, clearly it doesn't give them any electoral value. So why go and embarrass yourself?
Embarrass?
Yeah, I mean, that's the truth. You really don't want to take on Peter Obi, for instance, or the more younger and vibrant aspirants on the other political parties. And you stand side by side on television. Is going to do something to you, because the moment people are viewing you, it's psychological. The moment you're on stage with somebody who bests you on stage, you could have psychological consequences for your campaign, right?
Could you lose out on a few of your people who might be equally as disappointed or embarrassed by your performance?
So the problem is you're likely to lose out on undecided. So people who hadn't made a decision before, mm-hmm. who are in the middle, mm-hmm. who are going to be voting for the first time, mm-hmm. will definitely not want to vote for somebody who came out poorly in a debate.
Yeah.
So this...
Or you could actually win them over.
Yeah, I mean, so these older foxes are not going to risk that, right? But I mean, I may be wrong. And to be honest, it's not like they can't hold their own on stage, to be honest. Tinubu is not a pushover. He's been governor, he's been senator. It's not like he's going to come on stage and stutter. He's a smart individual. He's a highly intelligent person, right? Atiku, likewise. But the problem is that when you place them on stage with a younger person, there are lots of things, especially in the digital media world and social media, that people can play tricks around to demean your campaign and to make funny jokes about you that could be injurious to your campaign, that could sway younger voters away from you. You don't want to risk that happening, and I'm not sure that they want to risk that happening, but who knows, they could want to pull it off and prove to the younger generation that they still have it.
I'd love to see that for real. I hope it does happen. Should it happen, man, I have been following on Twitter, just, you know, watching posts from INEC and all their preparations, and I was like, oh, this is a good way to actually see what INEC could be up to, or the EFCC or other, you know, observers, local observers can actually look to as a yardstick to what we can expect in 2023. And I was utterly disappointed with the level of votes buying that just went round the city. I saw pictures, videos of EFCC arresting people for sharing money or receiving money, and then there were some youths, some young girls, some young boys on Instagram showing off the 3,000 naira, the 5,000 naira that they received with their PVC, and I was like, what is going on? Do we not learn? Do we not change? Do we not want better? And how is this an Ekiti problem? Because is this peculiar to Ekiti state, or are there really average Nigerians out there that are willing to sell their votes for 3,000 naira? It's totally beyond me. And I saw the end of that election. We all know who the winner is. But what is INEC's role, though, in a situation like that, to make sure that, elections are credible and void of votes buying? Someone has to be responsible for that. That particular problem has to be vested or a particular people who are to solve it. And I'm thinking it's INEC, because if you can say an election is inconclusive because, you know, some areas had issues, polling units was upside down, smart card readers weren't working, you need to reconduct, then it should apply the same way when you perceive vote buying. You should be able to cancel an election. Something just has to give. This just cannot be the way we run elections in Nigeria in 2022. Not under the INEC's watch, the same INEC that has given us CVR, that is having the Beaver system, the bimodal, you know, visual system, and all of the smart tech innovations they've had over the years. I mean, what are your thoughts? Because EFCC came into the picture, but...
Were you disappointed with young people?
Oh, of course I was disappointed. I was embarrassed. I couldn't believe it. I was utterly...
But they're broke and poor. What did you expect them to do?
Broke and poor?
Yeah.
Come on, man. What would 3,000 naira do
broke.
For you?
They are poor. There's no job. I think we're in some sort of a bubble in Lagos. Even in Lagos, people sell their boots for 3,000 naira. But really, I mean, why are you shocked? Because I don't get it. You think 5,000, 10,000 doesn't mean a lot to these young
people? But it wasn't 10,000 even.
Some got like 5,000 naira. I mean, I'm surprised that you're surprised, really. But do you think anything was going to happen differently in 2023? People are going to sell their votes, for God's sake. But honestly, why are we angry that young people are selling their votes for 5,000 naira when delegates sold their own votes for a good amount of dollars? We saw what happened in the primary elections, right? So you have middle class, in fact, elites selling their votes for a particular candidate. You know, the leaders of the people who put delegates together collected monies to sway votes for people, right? Everybody's collecting money up there. And then we suddenly become righteous when Kafaya wants to collect her own 5,000.
But you know, something has got to give. What can we do to curb it? That's where I'm headed right now.
You have an idea.
I don't have an idea off the top of my head, but someone has to be responsible
People say that we should empower the middle class, make them better off, right? It's the job of the government to create an economy that works for them. But they are not doing it.
They will not do it.
They will not do it. So what are we going to do? We're stuck in this vicious cycle. Let's still... Listen, as long as people take monies, your favorite politicians take monies or juicy appointments to decamp, and then you don't want the poor and the less privileged to sell their votes, it makes no sense to me. There's no integrity at the top. So why do we expect integrity at the bottom? There's no ideology at the top. Why are we looking for ideology at the bottom? So it beats me that we're expecting some sort of righteous sanctimony from poor people who have been at the receiving end from political rascality to suddenly find Switch. A moral high ground not to take the 5,000 naira. Who shared the 5,000 naira? People who ran campaigns for these individuals collected their monies. The photographers who take their photos collected their monies. So everybody along the chain took money. But when it came to Kafaya and Chinedu and
BC.
And BC, we say no, you are bad for collecting money.
All right, guys, that's our time. It's Avalon Radio, it's Ayo, it's Michelle. You know what to do. Hit the subscribe button, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and like, and also click on the notification bell so you can get that update when we drop something new. The politics is hitting, and you want to be on Avalon Radio every single time. You can also put your comments down below. Let us know your thoughts on Mazari and Tinubu. What do you think about that combination? Do you think he's just there to hold the space? Same thing with Ifeanyi Okorah. Do you think he's lightweight or there's more of him? He might be even mysterious. He might pull some stunts, and we might be applauding his doggedness at the end of the day. And also let us know what your thoughts are on Peter Obi and Kwan Kwan. So do you think that will be happening? Do you think a merger will be happening? And lastly, what do you think about vote buying and the Ekiti State elections? Do you consider that a credible election? What is your stance on INEC so far? It's Michelle.
Just for a wrap up, I'd like to thank the Rap Joint Lagos.
Absolutely.
If you're in Lagos, you need to check this spot out. They have the best of books on politics and music, entertainment, It's the best spot in Lagos. You can have a fantastic meal at a restaurant and listen to rap music all day long. It's one joint that you don't want to miss. So thank you to Rap Joint for hosting us, and you guys should check this fantastic place out. See you next week.
All right.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the News, a special series on the road to the 2023 general elections. You can find this episode every week on the Avalon Podcast or on Spotify and Apple Podcast, wherever you get your podcast. Thank you for listening.